Last year, I had my first sober birthday at 31. It was chill. It was great. I went to a jazz club with a friend and dinner, and it was everything and then some. Like, I really had a chill birthday, and it was just what I needed. My 30th, though, different story. So I'm going to talk about my 30th now. Hello, 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 and welcome to the show, the Sober Butterfly Podcast. It is me, Nadine Molina, and in this week's solo episode, I'm going to be guiding you through some lessons that I've learned and some gems that I have acquired, all under the subject of shame. Now, as I was preparing for this week's episode, which is about shame, I couldn't help but think about my birthday, because it's coming up, 22nd of March. I'm an Aries. Shout out to all my March babies. Shout out to all my Aries, even Pisces, because I am on the cusp, and I definitely think I have some Piscean tendencies. How many birthdays have I celebrated drunk? And I can't say for certain, but I can ballpark and say anywhere between 12 and 15. 18 to 30, that would be 12 years, I was drunk on my birthday. It was a really great launching point for me in this week's episode to think about all of the shame shrouded in my birthday, because I'm a reformed birthday princess. I was kind of basic, one of those people that like, okay, let me take that word basic back. Like, no shame if you were a birthday princess. I just don't do birthdays the same way that I used to, because I actually think a big part of me celebrating my birthday was a lot to do with ego and wanting to show people that like I had friends and family that loved me, that would show up for me on my birthday, which is kind of sad to think of it in those confines, but that's how I saw life. Anyway, so reformed birthday princess, and so that meant a lot of logistics, a lot of planning, a lot of, you know, evites. It was a lot of like superficial motives or motivations. And so I say all that to say, so I go through all of this work to like have the best birthday, and then I would be so drunk. And this is confirmed every birthday, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. And then the big 30, which is the birthday I'm going to mainly focus on for the sake of shame and birthdays going into this week's episode. So before I actually turned 30, I knew I wanted to take a trip. I was living at the time in Mexico City in the midst of a global pandemic. So a lot of people weren't really available to just pop into Mexico to celebrate my birthday with me. This is when I was really getting into traveling and even doing solo trips. So I was like, why not take a solo birthday trip to turn 30? That would be perfect. I reached out to friends to actually ask them for content. I was like, okay, what videos do you have? What photos do you have of me? Can you guys send them? I put this in a group chat. I was like, yeah, send them to me. I'm going to put together a little video for like lessons that I learned in my 20s from a 30-year-old's perspective. I was at this time just starting my YouTube channel. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that as a way to commemorate all of the progress I've made and reflect. So that was like a good idea, right? Like, oh, lessons I've learned in my 20s. Great. Until I got the content that people sent me. And I'm laughing because you may have figured it out already. Most of the content was me belligerently drunk, hungover, slouched over, leaning, sleeping, passed out. Did I say passed out already? It was a lot of just like drooling, literally like photos of me in the bathroom. Just the most unflattering, uninspirational, embarrassing. Let's stick with the theme of this week's episode, shame. Shameful content just flooded the group chat. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? I'm not putting this on the internet. So anyway, I never ended up making a video about like 20 lessons I learned in my 20s, because I didn't learn shit, if I'm being honest with you, right? Because a lot of the things that I was seeing, those irrefutable evidence points, like AKA photos and videos of me, I still chose to like just suppress it, just like stuff it down, somewhere deep. I don't want to see it. I now don't want to think about it. Let's not talk about this. In fact, I regret starting this group, because then people started talking about funny moments, stories that they had of me, once again, drunk. And I'm like, yeah, I barely even remember that. I don't know what you're talking about. This sucks. So anyway, I go to Cabo by myself And it was supposed to be a perfect, like, just solo getaway trip. 30, I'm grown, entering this, like, different, like, phase of life, or so I thought. And when I landed in Cabo, I was already lit. Okay, I was already drunk because my flight had been delayed a couple hours. So, of course, I'm at the airport just throwing it back. And then on the plane, I think I had a couple more. So when I actually landed in Cabo, it was time to decide how I was getting to my hotel. There's a few options you can take. You can take like a private car, which is what I was thinking about doing, or you can take like a shared shuttle with other people who are going on in the same direction. And all of a sudden this guy comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, I know you." And I'm like, "Yeah, you look familiar." And then it hits me, I do know this guy. So maybe like 3 weeks before this moment, I was in Puerto Escondido, which is like a little sleepy beach town, surfer town in Mexico. And I went with two girlfriends and we met the same guy that I'm staring at now outside of the Cabo airport. And it's just like weird because he lived at the time in that town and I lived in Mexico City. And we just happened to be on the same flight coming from Mexico City going to Cabo. So I'm like, oh my God, this is a sign. I'm by myself. I wasn't like really attracted to him, but I was like, oh, like we can hang. Like, yeah. So we ended up getting into a shared taxi together. He was staying somewhere else, but like he convinced me I wanted to keep talking to him. And he was like, oh, like this is cheaper. Like, let's just take the shared ride. So we're in this van. It's nighttime. That's important as a detail. So it's nighttime and we're riding along and we're making small talk and it starts dawning on me, right? I'm drunk, but I start getting this like memory of like this guy and I'm like, hold on a second. Like we did meet in Puerto Escondido. If memory serves me right, which by the way, I was drunk when I met him, but if memory serves me right, you were like weird. Like he was creepy. And then it starts dawning on me. Yeah, like he was basically trying to sell me and my two friends tickets to go to some party, mansion party. But like the way he was approaching it was like, yeah, give me cash and then I'll give you the ticket to the party. Something weird. And we're like, we don't know you. We're not giving you cash. Like, no. And so then he kind of like hung by our, because we had like a cabana. He just like kind of sat by the with us, but wasn't really like talking to us. And it was just weird. And so when I remembered that, I was like, yeah, like he was weird. But I'm talking to him now and he seems okay. So at one point, I can't even remember actually, but I just know that like he reached down to, he dropped something. He's rummaging and it's dark. And I even remember being like, oh, I can put my flashlight on. And he's like, oh, no, no, it's okay. I got it. So I get dropped off before him and I say goodbye to him. And another important detail to note is that like you pay before you leave the taxi. So I paid the taxi, so I'm saying goodbye to him. And that's important to know because this man stole my wallet. It really feels like you're having a moment, pun intended, when you're sipping on the lovely and refreshing moment. Now, what I love about moment is that not only does it taste delicious, I have my favorite flavors. I love the blood orange. I love the spicy mango. But it's also good for you, which is exactly what I need in my life right now as I'm in my early 30s. It's infused with L-theanine, which is great for mental clarity. It also is packed with ashwagandha, which is great for helping to fight stress. It's made with all of these natural botanicals, which really enhances your vitality. It does not contain any added sugar. It's caffeine and, of course, alcohol-free. And you can purchase it in still or sparkling. I love a good sparkle moment, so that's typically the route I take. In the morning, it's great for a boost to start the day versus in the afternoon if you want to beat that afternoon slump and enhance your mental clarity or if you just need, like, a simple pick-me-up. Like, for me, I love to have a moment after the gym versus going into the gym because it just really helps re-energize me. And then in the evening, if you want to wind down after a long busy day and enjoy a delicious mocktail without the hangover, then Moment is great for that too. One of the best parts for me with Moment is that I feel like it's a really conscientious brand They donate 1% of all their sales to mental health nonprofits, so you can feel good about supporting greater causes as well. Head over to drinkmoment.com and use my code TSB23 to receive 12% off your very first order. Let's be moment buddies. We can both have moments together. He saw when I went to pay the taxi, when we got into the taxi, it was nighttime. He's talking to me, he's engaging me, then he's like rummaging through my bag because he saw exactly where I put my wallet and my purse. And then he said goodbye to me and he was really like doing the most, you guys. Like he was really like, yeah, like tomorrow I'm gonna go to this part of town. Like you should come with me. I'm gonna rent a car. You should come with me. Like just doing so much. He even gave me a hug, helped me with my luggage. It's so crazy how like your sixth sense sometimes is like guiding you. Or you know things before you really know them. Because I can't explain it. Like, I just, as soon as the van pulled away, I was like, where's your wallet? Like, I just immediately had this thought, like, girl, where's your wallet? It was gone. Anyway, this man steals my wallet. And I'm like, wow. Thanks for setting the tone for my trip, buddy. Thankfully, I had a form of identification because I had my passport separate. So I was able to have my cousin, Western Union, me money, and I had money, cash. And so that's how I was moving around Cabo, just with cash after that. But anyway, I end up going to different like beach clubs and, you know, I'm by myself and people were being nice to me and I'd say like, oh, it's my birthday. And they kind of like adopt me into their friend group. Of course, I'm drinking and now I'm drinking a cocktail of different things, wine, mezcal, tequila shots, you know, whatever else they're drinking in their bottle or whatever. So literally the day before my birthday, I'm at this beach club and the tide turns. I'm not glossing over this for the sheer fact of moving along. I don't remember. Like, I remember hanging out with one group of people from California who were beach volleyball players from OC and they were super nice, to hanging out with this couple that definitely was trying to solicit me to have a threesome with them. And then I remember turning them down. And then the room, it wasn't even a room, it was a beach club. So the world was spinning on its axis. And I remember then somehow being in the sand, like lying on the floor in the sand, puking. And then basically covering my vomit because I was embarrassed even in my drunk state. Trying to like cover my mess like a dog, you know, like how a dog like buries their throw up. Yeah, that's what I did literally in the sand. Like I dug a hole, moved my vomit into it and then covered it over. So that's how I spent my 30th birthday. I have little like bits of memories kind of fill in the gaps. Like I remember the people that worked at the beach club helping me get back to my Airbnb. I wasn't even staying at that hotel. There was a hotel attached to it. Like I did not stay there, but like somehow some kind person made sure. And I remember them texting me the next day or WhatsApping me the next day and being like, hey, I'm just making sure you made it home safely. Like my cousin took you home. So like they called their cousin to make sure that I made it home. Like they didn't even just put me in a random taxi. So yeah, you know, a lot of bad things could have obviously went wrong. I'd already had my wallet stolen, so now I'm just down to cash. Like, someone could have easily robbed me in that state. You know, even that couple that was trying to get me to go home with them, like, they could have been more forceful, I'm sure. They actually followed me on Instagram, so. It could have been a situation where, you know, I'm not gonna use your imagination. I know I have, but that should have been a warning to me to slow my roll down. But no, the next day I woke up with like vomit in my hair, sand everywhere, and thankfully in my own bed. And I had all of these missed calls from people who are now like saying happy birthday and all the messages. And I tried to pull it together, but I felt like crap. So I remember I sat on the beach and I was so hungover, but so determined to prove to the world that I was having the best solo birthday trip to Cabo, especially on my 30th, which is supposed to be a milestone. At least that's how I saw it then. Like, okay, like I'm turning a big girl age, time to put on my big girl bathing suit and be my best version of self. But that's not how it was going. And so I remember feeling a mix of emotions, but mainly shame was the most presiding emotion. And I was ashamed for a number of reasons. And so I want to use this as an opportunity, as an opening to talk more in detail about shame and what I've learned about shame from some of my favorite contemporaries. There's a lot of research that's emerging around shame. I like to use Brené Brown as sort of like my guiding star when it comes to how I define shame, especially in terms of my drinking, my addiction, because it is important to distinguish between shame and guilt. And the way she does that is she defines guilt as, okay, I did something bad. So let's connect that to my drinking birthday fiasco of getting blackout at a beach club, you know, after having my wallet stolen the day before and then feeling like crap, you know, the day of my actual birthday because I blacked out and don't even know how I got home. So that is, you know, a specific example or series of examples that is behavior, right? So if guilt is behavior, like you're blaming the thing, you're embarrassed by the thing. So I was embarrassed by my drinking. But here's the difference. Like shame, on the other hand, so if guilt is I did a bad thing, like blackout at a beach club solo and put myself in great danger, versus shame, I am a bad person, is holy crap, this has been an ongoing epidemic in my life. Judging by even the content that my friends are sharing that I asked for, right? You know, all of these images of me flooding my inbox or flooding my group chat around me being the quintessential party girl that can't you know, handle her liquor. At that point, it was like a buildup of me just being in this really like sentimental mood or nostalgic, and then coupling that with like the bad thing I did again, literally the day before my birthday, going into my birthday, because literally it was midnight by the time I made it home. So I felt shame. I didn't feel guilt. I didn't feel embarrassed even about what I did the day before. I felt ashamed of myself, like disgusted, absolutely ashamed of my behavior, and not just my behavior. What I didn't recognize at the time was my disease. Brené talks about, she defines shame as the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. And something we've experienced, done, or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection. And so I think that's actually an amazing segue into Cara Delevingne's interview with Vogue. I finally listened to it. I talked a little bit about this last week on the pod. And Cara Delevingne, you know, is sober. She's been sober for a few months. After some images surfaced, very unflattering, very alarming, heartbreaking, quite honestly, images of her sort of like in a state of desperation and looking really unhealthy. She talks about how she was under a tremendous amount of pressure at this time with her work schedule. And then she took a little break. She went to Burning Man. I think she went maybe on like a little vacation for 3 weeks. And so that was around the time that the photos of her were captured. I want to take a moment to play a little excerpt from the interview that Cara Delevingne did with Vogue's Germinadi about her journey of healing and sobriety in the wake of some personal challenges. And I really love this idea of how she frames her recovery as more being healing rather than recovery. And she does that to destigmatize, or I see that as de-shame, this idea of addiction. Let's take a listen.
I think the way that society deals with healing is dangerous. It's so quick to shame people and use words, and it, no wonder there's a stigma. You know, if it was just an intrigue to like, oh, I hope they're okay, that's one thing, but it's not. It makes the whole cycle worse for people going through it. I got hired a lot to talk about and to advocate for things like mental health and for people that are struggling. But wow, when I'm struggling myself, that's not okay. Bye. There was a lot of shame. There was a lot of hatred that in my head I thought was my voice, but it wasn't. It wasn't my shame. I had to like relinquish control to get it back again. You can't run from the things in your life that happen. That's all I've ever wanted to do, was just pretend they don't exist. Because that would be easier, right? No, it makes it worse because it will catch up with you. It always does. I didn't want to face everything, whether it be my own self-hatred, which is an interesting thing to say because it's not like, wow, woe is me, like my life is hard. It's not. I have a wonderful life. I have a blessed life. But sometimes that doesn't match up to the way you feel about yourself.
Shame is the swampland of the soul. It's this, you are never good enough. It's this, who do you think you are? And we hear that in Kara's voice, right? Like this idea that like, I'm not good enough, or, you know, I'm trying to outrun these things that have happened or numb them or subdue them. And that is very much how I felt on my 30th, where it was like, I'm trying to outrun myself. I'm trying to convince myself that I don't have a problem, even though I'm in the same predicament and I'm using to mask how I really feel about myself, which is exactly what Kara said, this idea of self-hatred.
I've always been such a seeker when it comes to knowing how to self-soothe and tools to use. But this time I wasn't. But that's kind of when you realize how resistant, the resistance towards something is really how much more you need it. All I knew is like if I was continuing to go down the road I would either end up dead or like doing something really, really stupid. Treatment was the best thing. It was always something I was very scared of. But I think I needed that community. I needed that support group. People do it in different ways, but that was mine.
The opposite of addiction is connection. I think the power of addiction is truly like the secrecy, right? Or the shame that comes from that. Like you don't want to necessarily admit to others or admit to yourself that you may be in a place, a broken place that you don't know how to quite get out of, which it sounds like Kara was explaining in her words. You know, usually she was such a self-seeker, and I myself, you know, would have those, I'll call them come to Jesus moments, when it was like, okay, girl, you did too much last night. You got to dial it back, right? And I can kind of pivot and adjust and buy myself more time is really what's happening. I'm just buying myself more time until the next big thing, big fuck up happens. And, you know, I'm not in the public eye in the same way that Kara Delevingne is, of course. But it's interesting that, you know, she'll get to this part in a bit. But, you know, she wasn't able to recognize in the thick of her addiction in those moments where she spiraled and we saw the photos, right? But like she herself didn't recognize that she was having a moment where she needed some intervention up until that point. So I think that's interesting. It kind of reminds me of like the footage that my friend sent me. I was imagining, let me just be clear, when I asked my friends for photos and videos, I was thinking like, oh, like this can be like a fun like montage, video, inspirational, all the things. I got none of that. And so I'm not comparing myself quite to Kara, but it was a similar kind of like moment when I was like, wow, hard to argue with cold facts, hard to argue with photo evidence, video evidence of my crazy erratic history with drinking and drugs. So yeah, that's just a quick parallel that I heard there.
So how are you adapting to this new way of living? How are you sitting in it?
I'm enjoying it. It's one of my favorite things to like go out and dance and have a good time, but actually have like deep conversations and connections with people. It's weird. I got back to this house and just everything looked different. It's like it was a new place because I was different. Your life can change if you give yourself a chance to really be who you are and sit in that uncomfortability, because my God, it's uncomfortable for a minute, but it gets better and it's worth it. That's why I find the term recovery quite difficult, because you don't recover. And that's okay. That's why I prefer healing. Because I'm constantly doing it.
Here's how I want you to approach those uncomfortable waves, that hot wave, and you know what I'm talking about. It is like a hot wave that rises from somewhere in the pit of your stomach and washes over you. And it's this idea that shame wave is what I'm going to call it. That shame wave, when it comes up, I want you to think about it like this. You don't want to ever push shame down, right? So when that shame wave comes, I'm not telling you to ignore it or push it away, because that will actually make it worse. What I am telling you to do instead, if we know that the antidote to shame is empathy, you know, it's great if you can find someone that can relate to what you're talking about and understand that place of shame and maybe where it stems from, or perhaps they have similar stories. That's where I think the power of group really comes in. That's why I love going to meetings and things like that, because you definitely relate to other people's shares and you're like, oh my God, somebody who freaking gets it, right? Like, someone that's brain is wired similarly to mine. Great. Beyond that, that's not always available to us. The empathy really needs to come from you. The empathy and the understanding is that you are not that same person. What struck me about what Kara said about preferring the term healing over recovery was relatable. I empathize with that, right? Because saying that I am in recovery, sometimes I feel ashamed to say that. And I shouldn't. I should not. I want to be clear about that. Like, I should not feel any sense of guilt or shame or embarrassment related to the fact that I struggled with a deadly substance, right? But I think there's something about healing that feels a little bit less rigid and feels more forgiving and forgiveful. And it makes me feel like I can use that. I'm going to take Kara's advice. It wasn't quite advice, but I'm going to use her term, healing, because I think it makes me feel better. And if we can all get on that same wave where we form like common language, maybe it can destigmatize some of the associations people have towards people in addiction or in recovery or who are in their healing. Even if you look on social media, you know, healing girl era, like we're all in our healing era, right? That feels good. That's a common language that we can use. Am I healing from a broken heart or am I healing from an addiction? You don't know. But if we can use that language, I think it makes us more powerful. When the world is watching and treats your sobriety, which she regarded as a matter of life or death, but treats it as a sport or a form of entertainment, I think that is just so, so sad in many ways. And I'm really rooting for Kara and the fact that she's opened up on such a public platform like Vogue. I hope that makes other people feel less alone in their sobriety, in their recovery, in their healing. I'm also just really excited and proud that she got the help that she needed. Her authenticity showed throughout this interview. So I really wanted to share that. Running back to my birthday theme, like, I'm really excited to admit and face my addiction, because it's not easy for anyone, no matter who you are, what you have. It's truly a continuous path. I'm also in this with Kara on a very different level, but I'm also always willing to speak up about it, because just doing so, even to one person, even if one person is listening to the show and it helps them, I think it's so worth it. So I'm rooting for everyone that is in this healing phase of life together. I want to take a moment to do my Sober Butterfly Collective. That's my new series where it's a curation basically of different sober topics. I mash it up. So last week we talked about Cara Delevingne. This week I want to talk about President Joe Biden. Biden is blah. Can I say that? To me, he's blah. But you know what? Sometimes we need blah. I think coming out of like all the drama of our last president, it's nice to have someone that's just kind of like making headlines for silly things like what I'm about to share right now. So he cracks these jokes, and jokes, I like jokes. I like actually really inappropriate jokes, not at the expense of, I mean, okay, I don't want to put my foot in my mouth. I don't want to get any hate mail. I'm not Irish, so I can see how this would offend Irish people, but apparently he's offended a lot of people. Let me tell you what he did. If you don't know, Joe made some less than flattering jokes. And I think the thing about jokes, though, is they have to be funny, especially if you're going to be like taboo in any way. If you're going to crack a joke about a specific group of people, like, it better fucking be funny. At the very least, that's where I think it's like even worse, because like these jokes weren't actually funny. But he jokes about how he's not really Irish. So he is actually Irish. He's about 5/8 Irish. But he makes this like really seemingly stereotype-laden attempt at humor. He literally says, and I quote, "I've been to Ireland many times, but not to actually look up, to find my actual family members. And there are so many. And they actually weren't in jail." So he says this and it's like a flat line delivery. Like no one's really laughing. And then he goes, "There's still a place called Finnegan's Pub. That's related to my family. I'm the only Irishman you've ever met that's never had a drink. So I'm okay. I'm not really Irish." What do you guys think? Was it just an off-color joke or does he owe an apology? Can these political figures stop trying to be funny and crack jokes? Like, I get that you want to be personable. I get that you want to be a little charismatic. But, like, when in doubt, when you're like, oh, should I say this joke or not? How do you think it will land? Don't. Just don't tell the joke. I don't go to my political leaders for stand-up comedy. I don't. I'm not laughing with you. I'm laughing at you. So let's just separate the two, compartmentalize, especially because you're like 80. And yeah, most of your constituents and future voters are not 80. So like you're talking to the wrong group of people. I think it was an off-color joke. I think it makes it a little bit more forgiving, the fact that he is in that community. Like, I think if another person were to say that who was not Irish at all, that would be more problematic. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of the Sober Butterfly Podcast. If you enjoyed my solo rant, please go ahead and leave a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated and it always helps the show grow, which we want that to happen, right? We want more people to hear the show. So yeah, go ahead and do that. Also, like if you want to get me something for my birthday, make sure that you subscribe to my YouTube channel where this episode will also be featured and leave this podcast a 5-star review. Okay, love you guys so much. I'll see you soon. Check me out on IG.